Great. Good afternoon. My name is Suzanne Ann Joran, and the title of my presentation is Evaluating Difficult Decisions in Public Health Surveillance, Striking the Right Balance Between Timeliness and Completeness. And I worked on this investigation with a number of other partners, including Jason Salimi, Jean-Paul Tanner, and Rachel Rukowski. Public health surveillance, the collection, analysis, interpretation, and dissemination of health-related data into public health action. And I love this quote from Dr. Satcher. In public health, we can't do anything without surveillance. That's where public health begins. And I know that everybody in this room believes that and understands that. But I want to take it a step further and say that it is also our responsibility to be evaluating our data and to provide good quality data that we're disseminating for public health action. And there are a number of indicators for data quality. Here are a couple that we use with the Florida Birth Defects Registry. Completeness, how comprehensive is our data system? And birth defects example would be the percent of birth defects captured within the state of Florida. We want that to be 100%, but that's not realistic. Accuracy, how valid is our data? If we're using ICD-9 codes, we want to know what the positive predicted value is of those ICD-9 codes. And the topic of this presentation, timeliness, how responsive is our data system? Once the diagnosis is noted, how soon is it ascertained by a registry or a surveillance system? So the Florida Birth Defects Registry is a statewide population-based registry. We use passive case ascertainment, so we're linking administrative data sources, hospital discharge records, infant death certificates, to birth certificate records. Once linked, we search for ICD-9 and ICD-10 codes indicative of a birth defect. And we currently have data from 1998 through 2012. Hence the topic of our presentation here, timeliness and improving timeliness. Our case definition includes all live births after January 1st, 1998. So we're excluding stillbirths and pregnancy terminations, and that's going to affect our completeness of the registry. An infant must be born to a Florida resident mother, and the diagnosis must occur before the infant's first birth date. So we have 1 year of follow-up for every infant. So from what I just told you about the registry, you can come up with a couple of reasons why we are lagging behind in timeliness. First, our case definition. 1 year of follow-up time for each infant equals 2 full years of case ascertainment data. For an infant that is born in December of 2012, they must be followed through calendar year 2013 in order to ascertain any birth defect diagnosis. Also, we're using administrative data sets, and on a good day, they're approximately 6 months behind. Plus, our cleaning, linking, validating, and compiling of the registry. So we have a work group, and we met to toss ideas around about how we can improve the timeliness of the registry. And we came up with these two areas, our case definition and then our data sources. So what if we shorten our case definition and shorten our follow-up time? It makes me cringe a little bit, but it may be a realistic scenario. We know that a lot of infants, a lot of diagnoses for birth defects are made early in life, but it really hasn't been quantified as to how soon in life these diagnoses are made. Also, the data sets that we use are available quarterly. What if we use less data? We currently use 2 calendar years of data, but what if we use 1.5 calendar year of data? That's another realistic scenario that we may be faced with. So our objective is to determine if the timeliness of the FBDR could be improved without significantly reducing the completeness of birth defect ascertainment. And we went about doing this by reconstructing the FBDR. We limited our reconstruction to only hospital data records, so the inpatient, ambulatory, and emergency department records. We do have other data sources, but these account for about 95% of our case ascertainment. We restricted the time period to 2006 through 2011, because during that time, these data sources had standardization of data elements. And then we looked at our two scenarios. The first one I refer to as age at diagnosis, which is varying the follow-up time to changing our case definition. And the second is using less data. So here's a diagram for our first scenario. And what it shows is that infant number one in green on the top, born in the beginning of our cohort year, is followed prospectively 1 year, 9 months, 6 months, or even 3 months, whatever we decide. And infant number two, born, say, December of 2011, is still followed for the same amount of time that infant number one is. However, when we change and we use less data, that's not the scenario. Infant number one, born in the beginning of 2011, will be followed for 1 year. But when we use less quarterly data, let's say we get rid of one quarter of data, an infant that's born in December will only be followed for 10 months and be included in the same registry as an infant for 1 year. And the scenario continues all the way down to 1 month, or even 1 day if they're born on December 31st. So we compared our reconstructed prevalence rates for 45 birth defect conditions. Our true rate we defined as all infants are followed for 1 year, our current case definition. We calculated a percent complete, our reconstructed rate divided by our true rate times 100. And we tested for statistical significance by calculating 95% confidence intervals and testing whether or not our true rate fell within our reconstructed rate. So our first scenario, restricting our follow-up time. Using just the birth hospitalization, only the first few days of life, 75% of our diagnoses are obtained. And it continues to increase to 98.6% with follow-up time by 9 months. But we found that this varied significantly by the type of condition. So on the left-hand side are the 45 conditions that we looked at. And in the gray bars are the percent of those diagnoses that are captured during the birth hospitalization. And what we find is, at the top here, we have conditions such as gastroschisis, club foot, bladder extrophy, anencephaly, conditions that are easily recognizable at birth, maybe even prenatally. They're known before before an infant was born. And then at the bottom here, we have pyloric stenosis, which only 1.4% of cases are identified on the birth record. Why is that? Because pyloric stenosis doesn't occur until 3 to 6 weeks of age. So an infant is already discharged from the hospital and will have to be readmitted in order for us to capture that diagnosis. So there's a lot of variation in our percent complete. But how does this affect our prevalence rates? So our true prevalence rate is in this column here, and it's per 10,000 live births. We're just going to look at this bottom. This is our overall prevalence rate. 204.7 for 10,000 live births. And no matter which scenario we use, whether we follow up just the birth hospitalization, we change our case definition to include 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, each scenario had a statistically significant different prevalence rate than our true rate. That doesn't seem very promising. Our second scenario is using less data. When we use only one calendar year of data, we're 95% complete with our birth defect diagnoses. I was really surprised to see that. And then when we add one quarter, we're at 98.3% complete, and it increases there. At one calendar year and two quarters of the second calendar year, we're at 99.4% complete. But we see the same pattern. It varies by condition. Up at the top, we still have gastroschisis, club foot, trisomy 18, the same types of conditions that are easily identified. And down at the bottom, we have biliary atresia, which shows up usually about 1 week of age. The same types of conditions that are identified later on in life, we need longer follow-up time for. And here's our prevalence rates using this scenario. Our true prevalence rates, what we're comparing to, and then we're going to look at our overall condition, or any FBDR condition. And we see that we can have a 6-month improvement using one full calendar year and two quarters of another calendar year without having any statistical significant difference in our prevalence rate for our overall conditions. Then we wanted to see what were some of the demographic and clinical characteristics of cases that we would miss by restricting our data sources or using less follow-up time. And what we found was that a higher proportion of cases were born among younger mothers, mothers without private insurance, mothers with inadequate or no prenatal care, term deliveries, and normal birth weight. So this really speaks to me saying that these are low-risk pregnancies. High-risk pregnancies, they're followed, they're at their visits, those are the preterm deliveries, the low birth weights. So we're capturing those that population. Some of the limitations of this analysis are that we restricted just to hospital discharge data. We do have additional sources of birth defect identification, so we're underestimating our completeness. We only selected 45 birth defect categories, so we're underestimating our overall birth defect prevalence rate. And then some of the other limitations have to do with the registry itself and its limitations, and the fact that it's dependent upon ICD-9 codes and the accuracy of those diagnoses, as well as it's dependent upon linkage algorithms, which disproportionately affects minority populations. And then our live birth case definition, which I mentioned, restricts stillbirth and termination, so we're underestimating our prevalence rates again. Our analysis did explore two different scenarios, the age at which infants are diagnosed with birth defects, and also a realistic scenario of data restriction. We quantified and evaluated individual strengths and limitations for 45 conditions that include all body systems. But overall, we identified 6 to 9 months improvements in timeliness that were achievable with minimum sacrifice to completeness of the registry. We saw that conditions that are easily identified and more likely to be diagnosed at birth were least affected by data restriction. And this analysis increases our capacity and ability to provide more current data and respond to questions from medical and public health professionals. We do not want to report this data to the CDC and have it annually, but if we need to respond sooner to an inquiry from a provider that's seeing something in their community, we want to be able to evaluate the strengths and limitations of our registry. And that's it. Now, I'll take any questions you have.
Any questions for Suzanne? I have a question.
I don't work with birth defects data, so maybe this is just my ignorance, but when you were showing the calendar and talking about how if you cut off some of the data that you would be not tracking babies born later in the year as long as babies born earlier in the year. It made me think, did you say that you're tracking up to 1 year?
Right.
If you do have a baby, let's say, that's born January 1, 2010, mm-hmm. and then they have a hospital record in the next calendar year, but it's later, like let's say March 1 of 2011, would you still count that as a birth defect because it's past the 1 year mark?
Right. We do follow up to 365 days of life, or 364 days of life.
Okay. So you don't count them even if they're in the calendar year, if they're after.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
That's not unique to Florida. Every state has different case definitions. Some states go up to age 3 or even age 5.
Any other questions for Suzanne? All right. Thank you. Thanks.